Happy to be welcoming back to the program Norfolk County Sheriff Pat McDermott to get a little update on how things are going in the Sheriff's Department and in Pat's world. How are you, Pat? Nice to see you.
Fantastic, Joe. Thanks for having me again. This is great.
Pleasure, pleasure. Next time it'll be in person, but I thought this would be a good opportunity to touch base, get a little update on now that things are looking a lot better in the pandemic, how things are going in your world.
Yeah, so it's great to be back chatting with QATV. And, you know, we are coming out of the COVID pandemic right now. Things are being lifted. And that includes us here at the Sheriff's Office. You know, I've been in office now for a little over 5 months. And certainly one of the first things that we had to deal with was, you know, the final stages of COVID. And we had a couple of outbreaks here at the facility early on, January and February, which, you know, required us to kind of put into our emergency proceedings in terms of how we can make sure that the inmates and the staff are as safe as we could possibly do. And for the first time in a while, we had to do a full facility lockdown where inmates were segregated into their own sites to just protect them. And at the same time, we were able to roll out an aggressive testing program to make sure that those tested positive were segregated from those who were negative. And it was quite harrowing for a couple of weeks up here, but luckily the vaccine started coming out. We were able to educate the inmates through a variety of different programs, and we're really kind of proud of what we've been able to accomplish over the last few months. We have almost 70% of our justice involved individuals as a total, which is about 234 inmates have been vaccinated, which is great. And 85% of our staff population have been vaccinated. So that's good news. We've also just been provided with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which hopefully is going to give us a lot more flexibility with the remaining staff and the inmates who are coming into our facility who need it. It's a one-shot deal, so that helps the cause. So we're excited, you know, to reopen programming. We actually just reopened our contact visits. One of the things that I think is vital to the success of our population that we serve is to have that ongoing contact with family and certainly those with children. You know, it makes for a better resident here at the facility if they have direct contacts, and we've been able to provide that. Prior to even me getting here with online visitation, but there's nothing more valuable than actually having your loved one here to kind of update you on what's going on. So we just opened up contact visits last weekend, and it was very successful to have that first interaction. So we're excited with that. We're excited that we've reopened our programming. A lot of our programming was based upon nonprofits and outside vendors that come into the facility and provide training and educational opportunities for the inmates. But unfortunately, that all got shut down. And just in March, we brought back our staff that does our reentry programs and some of our education. And we're now starting to bring back our outside vendors. So we're really excited to get back to what I want to see as a very robust programming here at the Norfolk County Correctional Facility.
What's the face mask policy, Pat, at the facility?
So we're still under a mask mandate at the correctional. Any congregate housing requires that masks are still required. You know, and we've always during the emergency that I got to give the staff credit where they were very vigilant to make sure that that masks were continued to be worn by our justice involved individuals as well as our staff, and that continues to this day. It's very difficult to practice social distancing within a housing unit here at the facility. So inmates, you know, that we have to make sure that they stay vigilant on this, and they saw what happened, when we did get an outbreak. And it's not fun. I mean, and when you have to be locked down in your small, you know, facility in the housing unit for lengths of period of time to contain any spread, that's not a good thing. So I think they saw the value of making sure that we remain vigilant on it. So we stay up to date with testing. We make sure that any signs of of inmates that have temperatures or any kind of cough or congestion. You know, they're tested regularly so to make sure that that COVID has not come in. We haven't had a positive test in quite a while right now, which is great. We still have folks when they're coming in at intake we do have them quarantine before they make it into the general population. But for the most part now, everybody's still wearing masks until we get, I think, probably further along and get more guidance from both the CDC and the Department of Public Health to determine where we can go and at what point we can, get rid of the mask. But for now, it's all about, health and safety.
Yeah. Now, are court hearings back in person again?
So the courts are still, I think that just this month, they're starting back to do some limited in-person. I know that we've had some of our, I spoke with one of our transportation officers this morning, and he was taking some of our folks to three or four different locations. So I know that there's some limited in-person hearings going on. We still participate in the Zoom hearings with the district courts. Superior Court, as was reported in some of the newspapers and the other media outlets, have opened up a court facility at the Lombardo's function facility in Randolph. Yeah. And so that's kind of an interesting thing. For those of us that had our proms there back in the day, we're now conducting criminal trials there. And that's going to go throughout the summer. Very limited, though, in what they can do. But we've been participating with the Lombardo's staff as well as the trial court staff and making sure that facility is safe by sending our canine dogs there to do the sweep of the facility just to make sure that no contraband is being snuck in. And so we're hoping, working with the trial court, that they'll be opened up, as we roll this out, because it really is a better environment for folks who are facing, their trials are coming up, to have an in-person hearing, to actually face the judge, face the prosecutor, being able to work with their defense bar in person to possibly come up with a plea deal. It's just a better system in place. I mean, the online court proceedings have worked. They've at least got us to a point where at least justice is still being served. But it needs to go back to where we were before. It's fine for preliminary hearings and evidence-based things, but when you're actually getting into to testimony, you really want to be in the courtroom to be able to confront each other to figure out what's going on. So I know that the justice involved, the individuals we have here, do look forward to going back and making sure that their case is heard. The trial court's backlog, though, and that's a serious problem right now that needs to be addressed by the trial court, because we have far too many people that are basically here on an extended period of time waiting for their, they're on a pretrial holding right now. So they're not convicted. They're waiting for their case to be heard. And I find that is not an acceptable practice. And COVID obviously was an emergency situation, but we need to make sure that the trial courts, step up and make sure that these folks get the day in court that they deserve.
Yeah, is the electronic monitoring program a potential way out of that?
Yeah, we just met yesterday about that to try to reopen the bracelet program that allows for a diversion program for folks that are nonviolent offenders that aren't really a big danger to the community, that we can come up with a diversion program that allows them to possibly do home confinement on a bracelet that we can monitor. So unfortunately for us right now, the practical issue is the fact we had three people, three of our corrections officers who were trained and were actively doing, this is a 24/7 monitoring program. And so we had three COs that were trained to do this. Two of them have since retired in the last year. So we only have one that's currently trained to do it. So we actually have an in-house effort now to recruit a couple of new candidates who can train and learn that system. But, we actually just had an inmate yesterday. We had a meeting with our pre-release population, which is 11 men who are getting ready to go back out into the community. And that was one of the suggestions that one of the gentlemen had he has. So he has a business that he's looking forward to get back in touch with. And he was anxious to see, is there any chance of having a braceless program back in place? So they're anxious to get it up and running. We are anxious to get it up and running. And I think it's a great tool to use as a diversion so that not more people are getting incarcerated when we can really use them out in the community. I mean, this guy has a business that services folks, and right now he's unable to do that because he's here. So
sure. We've heard a concern that the pandemic may accelerate issues of substance abuse. Pat, are you seeing evidence of that in the population, or are you concerned about that going forward?
Yeah, you know, it's what, like anything else in the media, you know, what grabs the headlines grabs the headlines. And for the last year, it's been COVID. It's been the civil unrest that's gone on in various parts of the country. And sadly, the issue of addiction, opioid and alcohol, hasn't caught the headlines as it had. It had been such a paramount importance for most communities prior to COVID, and it still is. I mean, most of the statistics I'm seeing that there was at least a 15% increase. Wow. In opioid deaths, overdoses, and certainly those folks that I'm talking to, as we've started to reopen our programming, we have a lot of addiction treatment nonprofits that we work with, and they've reported to me that there's no question about it that folks with addiction have suffered under COVID-19. The odd thing, I mean, we're not seeing it from a criminal justice point of view in terms of people coming into the facility necessarily, but those that are here, we have programs in place that we're addressing. Mm-hmm. Substance abuse issues. One of the biggest things we do here is deal with the substance abuse issues of our population. And you know, right now we're in the process of, you know, we have a big a grant here, a $700,000 state grant that allows us to provide what's known now as a medication for opioid use disorder. It's our MOOD program, which provides drug counseling, ongoing community support for treatment post-release. It's basically helping, you know, to treat substance abuse a little bit more holistically, with evidence-based prevention, treatment, and recovery support services that are more likely to result in successful reentry for folks. So that's what we're focused on now. I forget exactly the number of men that are involved in that program now, but it's a daily program that we have with our justice-involved individuals and our medical staff. And it's been, you know, I wasn't quite sure as a candidate for sheriff whether or not this was the right direction, you know, because, you know, when you're helping people get off of one substance by introducing them to another substance, you don't want to perpetuate addiction. But so far the results have been pretty good, and we're hoping, but anything else, we have to track this in post-incarceration world. So we're hoping that the success these gentlemen have had in the facility, especially even yesterday, there was at least three or four out of the 11 that had substance abuse issues. Hmm. That are getting ready to go back into the community. Two of them have indicated they're going to be going to a sober house to at least bridge that gap before they fully go out into the community. And that's voluntary. They want to do that, which is good news. Is that that the programming that we're doing in-house here, which is encouraging people to go into sober living facility prior to them going off on their own. Because the worst thing in the world is once they leave our facilities, that is for a man to go back to where he was before incarceration. And that's where the danger comes. If they go back to where they were before, there's a higher likelihood that they're going to either recidivate, come back in through other criminal activity, or they're certainly, sadly enough, we'll go back to the substance abuse, and unfortunately that could result not just coming back to jail, it could result in death, and right. We don't want to see any more of that.
Yeah, no, I know that going back. I mean, back to the days of Cliff Marshall, really. That the goal has been their corrections, right? Is to stop repeat offenders.
Yeah, and we have a very successful. The other thing that we're doing in house, we just started it up once again with COVID being released, but we have a recovery panels which to me are the most important. I wasn't able to attend the first one, and I'm looking forward to the next one, which is coming up, I think, this month. But it's a program that connects substance abuse disorder with community partners and organizations that we have. And we have participants from about 30 different agencies and nonprofits. And we had our first recovery panel that was back a month ago. Had 25 speakers from 20 different organizations, and it was attended by 20 of our just as involved individuals. And the feedback we got from the participants was really great. So we want to keep that going to the recovery panels, because these are real life folks that are coming and speaking. Some of them have been in the prison system. They've been through the addiction treatment programs, and now they're back out, and they serve as more of a mentor, and they serve as kind of hope for these folks that there is success outside of prison.
Can you talk a little bit, Pat, about, I know there's some job training opportunities that you have, and I know you also partner with some institutions of higher education to really kind of create a path forward after incarceration, right?
Absolutely. No, that's one of the things that I was most focused on when I was running for office, was talking about, reentry starts on day one of incarceration in terms of putting people on the right path towards success. And, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to the basics. You know, it comes down to basically, you know, where are you going to live post-incarceration, and do you have a job? Mm-hmm. And those are the things that even yesterday, talking with our pre-release folks, those are the questions I was asking. What do you want to do? What are you looking to do? What's your plan? And so one of the things that I wanted to work towards was focusing, like I said, on day one, reentry plan, especially focusing on job skills and education. We have a very good program here for some basic stuff, obviously a GED program through our HICET program that focuses on making sure that our men at least get that high school education. It's a very successful program. We have a high pass rate on that, which is great. And that's continued even under COVID and now under this plan. We just recently have been awarded a Perkins Workforce Program grant, which is a competitive grant that develops a workforce training program that's in partnership with Massasoit Community College. And it basically enrolls our justice involved individuals at Massasoit through their HVAC pre-apprenticeship program. So one of the guys yesterday talked about that's something he wants to do. He wants to get into HVAC work. We don't have the program fully ready to go yet, but I said to him, I said, if this is something that you're truly interested in doing, and I think he might be getting released in August, and we may be just starting the program in the fall, then we're going to try to arrange for him to be a participant in the program, even though he's not with us anymore. Because I think there's such value in making sure that not only are we training these men in-house for the post-release, but we also help them when they're released. We follow up with them and make sure that those programs continue. So that one's we're pretty excited about. Another local to Quincy program is right down on Hancock Street with the Social Workforce Development Board and Mass Hire, the Social Career Center. We just recently, within the last week, I got word from Ron Iacobucci that we are the recipients of a partnership grant that'll help us strengthen that social workforce development partnership. And it gives us the opportunity for post-release stability and opportunity for our justice-involved individuals through training, life skills training, consistent outreach and mentoring for these gentlemen once they get released from our facility. So that's a very exciting thing. And we also have worked with our partners in labor. I've had great success with various trade unions that are very excited in offering some of our guys an opportunity to get involved in the building trades. And there's a lot of opportunities there. There's some hurdles we have to overcome in some of the trades, specifically the ones that require licensing. Because there's a lot of, either regulations or statutes that can preclude somebody from getting a license if they've been convicted of a felony. So we need to work with, you know, our legislature and our in the executive office to see if there's any opportunities that we can help with that. You know, we've worked with some of our the men that have had licensing issues in terms of driver's license issues. Mm-hmm. We have a partnership with the Registry of Motor Vehicles to try to reinstate driver's licenses that may have been suspended for various reasons. And certainly make sure, going back to the driving thing, one of these, it's on paramount, because I have to reach out with my friends with the Teamsters Union in terms of driving trucks and things of that nature. So you need specific CDL licenses for that. But our electrician union has been great. Our plumbers union has been fantastic. I've been talking to the Carmen's union with the MBTA, and those partnerships that we have with our labor unions is going to be vital. We're hoping to have actually a job fair in the coming months that brings those labor union leaders into the facility, that, you know, set it up just like you would at a college, you know, job fair.
Yeah.
And just to provide, you know, as I said to the guys yesterday, I said, you know, sometimes it's you don't know what you might want to do, and you got to hear it and have an opportunity to experience it. And so so we're going to be doing a little bit of that. We're like in-house, we're trying to do we have a whole garage out back that services our vehicle fleet. And so we're hoping to have an automotive repair program up and running. So even the basics of being able to show somebody how to change oil, you know, mm-hmm. that perhaps, you know, we can partner with some of our friends in the community, the business community, whether it's, you know, like a Jiffy Lube or even a local car dealer or something like that would be able to hire and partner with us and hire one of our folks that have been trained through our program here. So goes back to the basics, as I said before. You know, if a person has a job, provided they have a place to live, it gives them the feeling of dignity and self-worth. And those are the kinds of things that we want to provide to the individuals that, you know, for whatever reason are coming through the criminal justice system. And a lot of it, you know, we deal with a lot of that addiction issue. We deal with a lot of mental health issues here. And that is the root cause of the criminal behavior in the first place. That's the danger there. And so we're trying to play that. We want to educate our population. We want to train them. And we want to help them with some of the demons that they're dealing with. And we hope that with a robust program like that, when they go back to the city of Quincy, when they go back to living in Wollaston or Howes Neck or Quincy Point, you know, that they're going to be a better individual and they're going to be a productive member of the community.
I think there are going to be a lot of opportunities going forward in the trades, in automotive repair, even in the business and financial and healthcare industries as well. So there's definitely going to be a need going forward for all those places. And even in the hospitality industry, they're having a lot of worker shortages right now, as you're aware, too.
Yeah, and you talk about another program we're trying to get up and running. We just have to get staff up for it a little bit. Is a culinary arts program, and I have a background myself in the hospitality industry back in the day, working in the restaurants down in Hingham, down Cape Cod. You know, we have a great facility here, a kitchen that you know we use obviously to feed, you know, up to 400 or 500 people a day, three meals a day. And but we can do a lot more by training with culinary arts and teaching our folks, you know, simple things of, like, you know, how to be a prep cook. Mm-hmm. You know, I have so many friends that own restaurants. You know, I was chatting with my friends at the Common Market the other day, and they said there's over 40 of their employees haven't come back from the pandemic yet. So they're hurting. I know Sean Galvin, my friend Sean, just opened a restaurant down in Weymouth. Yep. And you know, they're nervous about making sure they have a full staff up and running. My father-in-law has a restaurant himself. It's a tough environment. And hopefully by the fall, as you know, some of the monetary benefits that are being offered by the government start or stop, you know, there'll be more and more people looking for employment. And we're hoping we can catch that wave with our inmates who are going back out to the community. If we give them a skill of culinary arts, it's like I said, as simple as being a prep cook. Mm-hmm. You know, that's half the battle, is working in the back room of a kitchen and doing that kind of work. It'd be fantastic. But I think there's going to be opportunities, and we just want to make sure that the men that we are working with are prepared once they leave our facility with a job and a skill set that that'll make them productive.
Yeah, I think, you know, give somebody a leg up and they can take it from there, you know, if they find their calling, for sure. Any preventative measures, Pat? I remember years ago there was the boot camp in Braintree. Is that still something that's on the horizon?
When you say boot camp, what are you, for the inmates, or
kind of team building effort?
So we do our Braintree facility is still home to our ropes course, which is we do leadership development down there, mostly with our youth, and we've once again reopened that camp for this summer, not at 100% capacity yet. And we had to go with the guidelines. We actually started out with a very limited amount of people. And then as the guidelines came out, we were able to open it to more kids to come down to the camp in Braintree. And now we're similar to the restaurant industry. We have a staffing issue too. And we can't go full capacity yet. So we're slowly ourselves getting back in, but we're excited to bring the kids back to the Braintree campus for our youth leadership academy. We've actually, and that's just not for the summer. We actually had, I think we have some kids down there today, from Dedham. It's also a day trips as schools start going back, in person, and they want to do field trips. It's a great opportunity. I'm hoping our friends in Quincy, take advantage of it, you know, over the course of, maybe coming back in the school in the fall. That ropes course and that leadership. We have a condensed program. The program is a week long program in the summer, but our staff have a condensed program that, you know, if somebody wants to come for a field trip, we do a short shortened curriculum. But the kids just want to get up on that ropes course. And I don't know if you've ever seen it in person, but it's quite intimidating. I'm not sure if I would survive up there, you know, 100 feet in the air.
Yeah. No. That's not for me, for sure. I'll just to cheer them on from the ground. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like anything else, I want to invest a lot in, you know, we talk about our at-risk populations, yeah, and people that are in danger of potentially going down the wrong path. And certainly it's an investment in the youth of our community is important. And it's one thing, you know, most of our kids that come to the camp come from great families. They're not from an economic insecurity point of view, but there are a lot of kids that are missing out. And I hearken back to my days when I was involved with the Quincy Youth Football League and helping them with their fundraising. And, you know, we were always talking about how much it costs and the fees associated with playing football. And I always made it a point. I said, you know, I don't want any kid to have to worry about how much it costs to play football. And similar to our camp here, I don't want any kid to worry about what the cost is, or, you know, we want to make sure it's available for every kid that wants to participate. And so we want to make sure that that's open and available for kids, especially those at-risk kids, you know, and we probably have to do a little bit more of better work to reach out to kids that might, you know, it's one thing to have, you know, parents, we have people lined up to take this camp, and it's an online portal to sign up, and we're sold out in 9 minutes.
Wow.
So there's probably a lot of kids that are probably not in a position to take advantage of it, and that bothers me. So I think we have to do a better job at reaching out to those kids that might be at risk, that might not have access to computers. They might not even have a parent that's involved in their life. I know that Quincy has a pretty significant crisis relative to homeless families and homeless children,
yes,
that don't have access to these things. So we need to do a better job to reach out to make sure that they have just as much of an opportunity to take advantage of this program so that we can keep them on the right path. Because it's very easy for a kid, you know, who's a teenager to just, you know, my mother always said, you know, it's who you're hanging out with, and where you're hanging out. And you hope that if they're not involved in sports right now, or in some kind of extracurricular activity, they're going to find something to do. And sometimes it's not always productive. And so we want to make sure that there's opportunities for those kids.
Yeah. Making choices, right? Making the right choices and having the right consequences for
exactly.
Yeah. I know you just recently created some kind of a partnership with Quincy College too, Pat, for your staff, right?
Yeah, it's directly for the staff, and it's going to expand to our inmates as well. But we wanted to make sure. One of the things I value most, I mean, I'm a lifetime learner. I got plenty of initials after my name for various degrees that I've had, which is great. But I'm a daily learner. I mean, whether you're reading a book, going towards a certificate, or taking a course in something. So I stressed it to our staff to continue education and make sure that, you know, when you're going for promotions, we're coming up on a promotion. We just did a promotional exam for our sergeant's test. And you need to be able to stand out. We had over 50 people sign up for the exam. I think we ended up with, 25 or 30 that followed through. But you need to stand out. And I think the value of the various educational programs that you're involved in helps you to stand out. So I've encouraged our staff to participate in extra educational opportunities. And I wanted to make it as easy as possible for them and affordable for them. And so Quincy College has stepped up to the plate. They're offering a significant discount to our staff to participate in their certificate programs all the different courses that they have to offer. And we're hoping to expand that comparably to other community colleges around Norfolk County and beyond to do that. And from the inmates' perspective, I want to make sure that once again, we have an opportunity for them to continue their education. And the community college system is the place to be. It's the most affordable. It's the easiest entry path towards the education system. And so Quincy College does a fantastic job doing it. So I give kudos to the college president, Rick DeCristofaro, who's done a great job in his short tenure so far. Mm-hmm. But just meeting with him and seeing his energy at the college, I have no doubt that Quincy College has a bright future. I'm a big supporter of the community college system. I have been for Quincy College since I was on the Quincy City Council, and I will continue to be. And I'm very grateful for the partnership that they've offered the Norfolk County Sheriff's Office.
That's great. Anything positive come out of the pandemic, Pat, in the Sheriff's Office that you think will continue post-pandemic?
I think it's, I think it was, I'm trying to think of the positive stuff. I mean, it certainly has brought... It brought everybody, I think, into a more of appreciation of how much direct relationships with individuals. I mean, relationships in general. I think you don't appreciate things until it's taken away, and I think that goes for our staff. It goes for those that we serve that are in the criminal justice system. You know, when we talked about earlier about just the simple thing of a contact visit with your loved one. When that's taken away, and I think it showed the value of direct involvement in your community with your family, and even talking to our, once again, I go back to my discussion yesterday with our pre-release guys, even those guys who were very used to going out into the community doing our cleanup programs and working with the municipalities. They were down at Quincy Housing Authority the other day. They weren't able to do that. And just to have that involvement, was a detriment to their health and well-being. So I think that if there's a positive spin, I think we all have a more of appreciation of what we had before the pandemic. And I think we all know, whether it's taking off your mask, being able to go out to dinner, or just having a graduation party for your kid, all of that stuff is I think. If there's a lesson to learn, it's how much we need each other. That's my focus anyways, and as sheriff, is knowing that we have to invest in each other, invest in the people that we serve in the criminal justice system, invest in our staff. And certainly it all goes back to investing in each and every community that we serve in Norfolk County. So.
Well, really appreciate the opportunity. Anything else you think we should touch on right now?
I think that we've covered quite a bit. I'm just going to scroll through some notes here. I think we're in good shape. The future looks bright. We're looking to get a little bit more. I mean, community engagement is going to be something that we're focused on for the summer. Now that things are opening up, we had a soft opening of some things that we were able to do in COVID. If we want to do a positive thing, watching the rolling out of the vaccines, we were able to participate with Manor Community Health, as well as the Council President Nina Liang, had us help out giving out vaccinations in some of the housing authorities. That was great. We're getting back out. The invitations are coming back to the sheriff's office. We're looking forward to coming to Quincy for the Flag Day parade coming up. That's coming out. The 4th of July activities. Some cookouts. We're looking to get our seniors back in place, our senior programs. I'm looking to come back out and hopefully get down to the Kennedy Center and chat with our seniors once that's up and running again. We got so many offerings that we want, but that's the future. We're looking to get back to engage in our community, because one of the things I campaigned on was community engagement. You know, we wanted to make sure that people feel safe in their community, and whether it's in Quincy or Brookline, Needham, Bellingham, Foxborough, we want to make sure that safety is paramount, and safety from all kinds of activities, economic insecurity, food insecurity. There's a lot of issues that aren't going away, and we need to stay vigilant on that going forward over the next several years. So we're looking for, as a sheriff's office, to get back out into the community, working with our local police departments, our councils on aging, our local elected officials, and certainly our friends in the media, to get the word out about the things that we're offering. And who knows, maybe I'll even get to sing a song or two.
I don't doubt that for a minute. Website, social media, all that stuff, Pat?
We're all over the place. We've got the website is NorfolkSheriff.com, which is very simple. You can go to that, and you can find us on Twitter. You can find us on at Twitter at Norfolk Sheriff, which is very simple. We got a Facebook page. Just shoot it on Facebook, Norfolk Sheriff. You'll find us there. And we push out something pretty much every day. That something that's going on, whether it's our Heroes program, or, you know, bring a 96-year-old World War II veteran to Logan Airport. We had Uncle Sam Roundsville from Quincy put together that program, and really gratifying. I get to participate bringing that 96-year-old veteran to Logan Airport to go visit the gravesite of the man that saved his life back in World War II. And so follow us on the social media. There's a lot of positive things coming out and things that are going on. So, and if we can be of any service to individuals here in your audience, or certainly to the communities in Quincy and beyond, you know, give us a shout out. Send us you can shoot a quick email through on the website. info@NorfolkSheriffMA.org, I believe, is our email address. But we're very accessible. We want to hear from the community to find out what you expect of your Norfolk Sheriff, and I'm hoping to fulfill those expectations.
I know you've got the Are You Okay program, the well-being phone calls. That's very, very popular and has been very successful, actually.
We need more people to participate in that. And I'll tell you something. We just yesterday... a 99-year-old woman from Quincy was saved.
Wow!
We instituted our daily phone calls, which come from our office, from Deputy Sheriff Cheryl Bambury. Mm-hmm. She immediately, when we did not hear from this participant, a 99-year-old woman, didn't respond, and so our dispatcher immediately called the woman's family, who I believe was the niece. Who were able to immediately check there. They have a video monitoring system at the woman's home, and could see that she was on the floor. Wow. And so EMTs were immediately dispatched, get her off. They were able to get her off the ground and without any need for hospitalization. So that was a great save by the Are You Okay program. The one thing that we don't have is enough participants. There's less than 300 people who have participated in this program. It's a free program and it saves lives. And, you know, any individual, you know, you don't have to be a 99-year-old woman. You could just be somebody that's living by themselves, and you can sign up on your own. You can call us at 1-866-900-7865. So that's 1-866-900-7865. You can speak with Deputy Sheriff Cheryl Bambury, sign up. It's free. You can sign up permanently, and you'll get a daily phone call. It's just an automated response. Or it can be a temporary thing. You know, if you have a loved one you know, you can sign up your mom or dad or somebody that you're caring for if you're going away for an extended period of time out of the country. And you don't want like two weeks for us to participate in that program. We're happy to do it on a temporary basis. And but we want more people to participate. And with anything else, as we roll out these programs a little bit more, we get back out into the community, get some more public relations going on, we'll be able to get more people involved. But we should have thousands of people signed up for that program because it does save lives. And I'm always encouraged when I get a good response, like I did yesterday. So it's very gratifying to see that.
That is fantastic and so great for that family. It's a great story. And it's just a great example of why you should sign up for sure. Pat, really great to see you. Really appreciate the time.
I appreciate it, Joe. And, you know, we covered a lot of topics today and hopefully I can circle back as we roll out new programs. We come out and definitely come on. The more we can get the word out, the better. And I always appreciate the work at QATV.
Oh, thank you. It's our pleasure. We're happy to help. And next time we'll do it in person.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Take care.
All right, Joe. Thanks.